Hello, everyone. I'm Leslie Cornwell, certified nurse midwife with midwifery business consultation. I have some good friends with me, Carolyn and Hillary. Unfortunately, Kathy couldn't be with us today, but I think we're going to have a great conversation for everyone. If you both want to tell a little bit about yourselves, they can definitely get a more in-depth discussion from our last video when we talked about the last 40 years of change in midwifery. So, if Hillary, you want to go first?
And those of us who've been around for the last 40 years, and I like to tell people that I have had all sorts of qualifiers on the word midwife, but that I've been a midwife for 40 years, and I've been a documented midwife, a permitted midwife, a licensed midwife, a certified professional midwife, and a certified nurse midwife. And what's the one thing when you boil it all down is I've been a midwife, and in this latter part of my career, I've been involved in midwifery education.
Yeah, thank you for being here today, Hillary. Carolyn, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hi, I've had a checkered past, so shall we say. I started out as a nurse back in the early 1970s and very quickly got involved in diagnostic ultrasound when it was a brand new field, and have had ultrasound as a part of my career and my educational, both clinical and educational careers, I should say. And then was a labor and delivery nurse for about 15 years and said, okay, I can do this. So I went to midwifery school and graduated from Georgetown. And I've been a midwife now for 35 years. And my clinical practice, I worked at Johns Hopkins University and then at University of Maryland for a total of about 20 years, and went to Georgetown University as director of the midwifery program there. So I got some experience in education and loved it more than I ever thought that I would. And then went back to clinical practice for a short while and decided that I couldn't stay up all night and all day and all night again any longer. And now I'm retired from clinical practice, but I am teaching ultrasound to midwives across the country.
Yeah, so you guys both have an amazing background, which is perfect, I think, with the education and so many aspects of how you've served. We could have a great conversation. I know last topic we talked about the changes in midwifery the last 40 years, and I was thinking, talking to you guys about the future of midwifery and where you see it going, we could talk about different aspects of midwifery, and I think it'll be a fun vision session of inspiration for others. So I know, Carolyn, before we started recording, you were talking about just the term physiological birth, where it was at and where it's now and where you think it's going to go. So if you want to repeat some of your wonderful gems before we hit record.
Well, I was in another meeting earlier this morning, and one of the midwives was talking over and over about physiologic birth. And I thought, you know, it wasn't that long ago that term didn't have much meaning. It certainly in the medical world and such, and how wonderful it is to hear that as a term that now has kind of more generalized meaning, when we've had our great research that came out in The Lancet with the
The Lancet series. I was just looking that up today. I was making the newsletter for May, and I actually added that it was put out in 2014, and it's an amazing series. And so, yeah, if you want to go to the basics, there may be some people listening to the video. What is physiological birth? Like, let's make no assumptions. There's seasoned midwives. There's somebody that maybe they just want to become a midwife. What is that?
It's birth as a normal process, and really understanding the actual process of labor and birth, and how women physiologically, without interruption from medical science and such, progress through their labor and birth, and what are the physiologic changes that happen, and how can we support that? And it's all about what we do as nurse midwives.
As midwives, period.
Yes. And so I think that there is a growing respect for physiologic birth, and there's a growing recognition that all of the interventions that have been done over the years, our C-sections, our inductions, and such, have in fact helped to drive up the maternal mortality rate. And now they're looking at that, and how can we help to decrease the maternal mortality and improve our infant mortality.
So who's I'm going to hop in and ask you, when you say they are looking, who are the they that you're referring to?
Well, the theys I'm thinking about are the American College of OBGYN, the Society of Maternal Fetal Medicine, as well as nursing organizations, NACOG, I call it NACA. God, that shows how old I am.
A1.
And so the major organizations that form kind of the guidelines, the policies, the procedures, the routines that we use in medicalized labor and birth are being looked at and very carefully.
So I'm going to hop in here, because even from our introduction, my experiences in birth have been so different than yours. And I've never worked in a hospital. I have, for my entire career, attended home birth and birth center births. And so I guess for me all along, it's been the folks coming to me who believed in birth, even before they had, again, with the not needing a qualifier, they believed in birth and the birth process. And yes, it's been labeled physiologic birth, but to those of us who've been working in the out of hospital setting, it's always been that's birth or uninterfered with birth. And as you were talking, I thought back to, and maybe we'll pull in the last 40 years and where we see it going, but there were always people working on this. And whether it was LaBoye or Lamaze or, gosh, I'm thinking about the Thank You, Dr. Lamaze, or Bradley, or all these men, but also people like Ina May. And then Elizabeth Davis with her Heart and Hands book. And I'm thinking about all of the folks who have been standing outside the system. And a lot of them came into midwifery, not through a nurse midwifery route, because they felt that that 30 years ago, nurse midwifery education was much more like making this compromise of, okay, I'm gonna be in the system, but I'm also still gonna work within an obstetric model. And I know that the folks who did midwifery in a direct entry route often were saying, oh, well, I guess I have to give up being in the system in order to have this, to hold on to physiologic birth and to hold on to what I truly believe is a midwifery model. So then you asked us, where are we going? Well, gosh, it's taken 40 years for all the studies to confirm what I feel like I knew back 40 years ago. How do we bring that so that that idea of birth as a normal process happens no matter what your setting is? And that you as a midwife can truly advocate for birth as a normal physiologic process, no matter what setting you're working in. And that, so that's where I see or hope that things would go. When I started in midwifery, we had single digit of cesarean rates. Right. And while we first allowed fathers into the delivery room, mm-hmm. and then allowed labor, delivery, postpartum rooms, and then allowed doulas in, and the wallpaper got nicer. But meanwhile, the cesarean rate was going up and the epidural rate was going up and the one-on-one nursing rate was going down in hospitals. And right. So I think that it's a whole system of thinking that midwifery says with women. It says, we're not going to stick you in a room with a fetal monitor and say, we're going to have one person at the desk. Right? But how, yes. But how do we, and there's so many pieces that go with that. So how do we look at reimbursement, not for procedures, but for time that practitioners spend? Because that is definitely an element of this. Right.
Yes.
How do we, and so some of my wish list, and I know that there are people, I live in New Mexico and there are folks in New Mexico looking at this, is how do we look at the hospital systems in the US versus in other countries? How come we have midwives under departments of obstetrics? If we are
midwifery,
why don't we have departments of midwifery? Why are midwives admitting not getting independent admitting privileges? Why are we still having struggles over supervision? You know, so there are so many different aspects that I feel like can be challenges to changing the view of this system. And it's not just, oh yes, we're going to recognize that there are studies supporting physiologic birth, but how do we change systems to actually allow that to occur?
Well, as you both were talking, and this is me being the innocent newer midwife on the call, is the collaboration of all these wonderful educational pathways of midwifery and being able to strengthen with each other. I think there's such a wall between understanding of the midwifery pathways where you choose to be a direct entry licensed certified professional midwife and you don't get any exposure really to the hospital system. You don't get much of a, like you see it with the transfers, but there's not much of a collaboration of that education. And then the nurse midwives, the clinicals and the barriers with malpractice during school, they tend to not be able to get much training or exposure to the other realm of midwifery. And I think it would be a great way to filter in that knowledge expertise if certified professional midwives could do training, if they could get more on site and vice versa. We could have more, just like the residents, like we could get more of an acclimation of all these settings learning from each other. So.
Right. I know when I was a program director, I insisted that every one of my students go to an out-of-hospital birth setting during their clinical settings. And it was amazing. Now I had several that were quite reticent, that had always been in the hospital, had always been labor and delivery nurses, and had no interest in going outside the hospital. And of course, those were the ones that I sent first. And it made such a big difference in them and their whole view of labor and birth and what happens in hospitals and how you can get babies born, believe it or not, normal and healthy with healthy moms without having IVs and Pitocin and cesarean deliveries. So.
Kathy is joining us.
Yeah, I just texted her to try to give her a little synopsis what we were chatting about. We decided the topic of last 40 years history. This time it's more the future. Like, okay, what are our challenges? Where do we think it's going to go? So Carolyn and Hillary were talking wonderfully about just some of the barriers, some of the great changes in the hospital healthcare system. But then Hillary was talking about physiological birth has always been that way. And how do we bridge more of a collaboration? So that's where our discussion is right now.
Thinking about the word undisturbed, you know, one of the things is when you're in an institution and you've gotten in your car and gone somewhere, that's really different from being in your own bedroom. And it's, can I say that I've been with people in the hospital and we've had fairly undisturbed births? Yeah. But really, home birth has been so much of the idea of that I slip in the door and I'm sitting in the corner. And I know that Michel Odent, that's who I was trying to think of his name when he talked about you know, midwives who sit in the corner and knit and know exactly when to put down their knitting and pay a little more attention. But you really, really being able to see what happens with undisturbed birth. And that's where really, really where you see physiologic birth. And right. Was it he who termed the fetus ejection reflex? I believe it was. That idea that when somebody is undisturbed and they're not being checked and told when to push or how to push, that you watch them move into pushing with what he called the fetal ejection reflex in the same way as we think about the milk ejection reflex for letdown. Mm-hmm. And I do want to include Kathy. I just want to say, I look to places that do not have this bifurcated path of midwifery. I believe my hope would be to bring together the overlapping educational pathways, because they really are, and I believe I said it the last time we talked, they really are overlapping circles. And I like the model of places like Canada, where a midwife is trained in every setting, home birth center, hospital, and then the midwife follows the client so that the client doesn't book a home birth midwife or a birth center midwife or a hospital midwife, but instead the midwife can serve her in any of those three settings that are appropriate to whatever's going on with her and her pregnancy. So that would be my ideal. Do I think it's going to happen in my lifetime? Not sure, but I'm going to keep working towards it.
Yeah. You know, one of the biggest barriers I see in our future, and it's an ongoing barrier, is just the medical society. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean it in a realistic way. One of the things in our community is we have a university midwifery program, but their students don't come into the community and Yes. They're not encouraged to go into the community. If they are, it's very minimally, because they don't end up in the community. They all want to work in a hospital setting. And as long as we continue to take on that idea, instead of what you just suggested, training midwives for the full spectrum, this battle is becoming harder and harder. And our medical societies are the ones that rear their head and say, well, now you're practicing medicine. And you're like, no, we're practicing midwifery. But that's the biggest barrier, is understanding the role of a midwife in the medical society, and that not all women need to be technologically monitored during their birth. And so, but I will say, from my perspective of out of hospital birth, there are very, very few midwives that are trained in listening as a knitter and watching while they knit to knowing what's happening. And that's our barrier. And we're not going to change that until we continue to press that on and move it towards that and encourage midwives to get that experience. I'm all about the Big Better Birth Initiative in the UK right now. And we can improve our outcomes if we would market them. And we can improve our birth settings if we would market them more. And what I'm getting at is market the outcomes, because the outcomes speak. The home births, the birth centers, the out-of-hospital community has better outcomes overall. It's not about the transfer rates. Those are very small. The majority of transfers are actually people that just need a little help to finish their birth. A little oxytocin, just a little augmentation, or maybe they need pain management. I don't know. But in those settings, usually there's a reason why they stalled out, or that they need pain management, because people are putting things in their head like they can't do this. So I look at it as barriers. We fight in our state for change, for independent practice, for freedom, for the movement of the birth center model, the community births. We continually hit the difficulty of our medical society. So I'm frustrated.
Are you guys aware of the study that was done through CMS that looked at, so it, so when we have the Centers for Medicaid and Medicare doing a birth center study and looking at outcomes and, and midwifery care in birth centers for women on Medicaid coming out head and shoulders above other models.
Right. It's great data.
Having reports like the ones that come out of, Childbirth Connection that's been putting out reports. And I think when we pair that together with maternal mortality issues, and especially Black maternal mortality, and this is the week to talk about it, poor outcomes, that it really is, just as Kathy says, that we need to be really politically active in saying, yes, our outcomes are excellent and across all birth settings. And, you know, one of the things that has really sort of got, I don't talk about a lot, but there really is a misunderstanding in the public between what a doula is and what a midwife is. Yeah. And I'm seeing all of these legislators who are pushing reimbursement for doulas as the solution. And at the same time, they're not talking about increasing usage of midwives. I actually called up Kirsten Gillibrand's office and had a very long talk with them and sent them a bunch of literature, because as an ex-New Yorker, I do listen to talk shows from New York. And she was on a talk show and was talking about how great it's going to be to have doula reimbursement. And meanwhile, New York, especially upstate New York, is like a midwifery desert in so many ways. And they've been very resistant to opening up midwifery licensing and created, when I went back to New York, and I'm licensed in both New Mexico and New York, when I went back to upstate New York after 10 years of practicing in New Mexico, no, a little less, 6 years of practicing in New Mexico, I felt like I was practicing with one hand tied behind my back. And it's this patchwork of state laws. So how do we get there is some of this political action work, advocacy work, you know, talking to our legislators as well as political action in hospitals. Now, I know that there's a woman who was a legislative chair for the ACNM New Mexico chapter who's actually gotten involved with restraint of trade and I believe the FTC, and is looking for midwives to come forward with restraint of trade issues. Mm-hmm. So it takes all these different avenues.
One that I've learned that's the most powerful is our consumers, and we need to empower our consumers for that change. If they're well prepared for their birth, which I think most community-based out-of-hospital midwives do that, then if they end up in the hospital, they do speak out. It's not the role of the doula to be their advocate and to speak for them. Oftentimes they're exhausted, I can't think, so the doula might pick in or fill in or as their midwife. But the most important thing is they need to say, do I really medically need that? Or do I have the right to refuse? Am I following informed consent? And if they understand that, that's how change happens. I mean, that's how reimbursement rates come up for midwifery, for birth centers, is our consumers going back to their insurance providers and saying, I want a midwife, they're not in network. Get my midwife in network or whatever it is, just to push the button on getting that, because that's where the change happens. And they're the constituents to the politicians. And we need them to constantly, we need to get back into the fight of moms advocating for themselves and for their birth. and their partners, the fathers of those babies, or their partners, to advocate for their birth experience. The pandemic is the best example of how we can take birth and totally mess it up by removing the partner that actually is the best birth support, by not allowing families to birth together. It's been horrible. And it made, in our area, it made everybody pretty much do a 360 and going, oh my gosh, we need to understand how to discharge early. And then we're going back to, remember like when the DRGs were brand new in the 70s and they were, everybody was allowed a certain stay and then they discharged them home. And then people were complaining because you got to go home with your brand new baby within 24 hours. Then they wanted to stay longer. So they got their 3-day visit, or, you know, 2 overnights back. And so we're back into that pendulum swinging. If you're healthy, why are you there? Now, granted, if you're a grand mal tip and this is your 10th baby and you want to stay away from the kids and take a little holiday, great, go to a hotel. You don't need to be in hospital if you're healthy and normal. So birth center models, out of hospital birth models, we really encourage that, even for our clients that might not have good toiletry, you know, like what I'm talking about, the Amish or the Mennonites, that maybe they don't have a flushing toilet and they have to go outside to use the bathroom, or they don't have electricity. You know, this is the time to make them feel important. Using a hotel is a great idea. Give them a break, make them feel like $1 million, recover without intervention, because
Kathy,
they don't.
I see the next business model for you, a respite boutique spa, like for postpartum, for the first couple of weeks after a baby comes. I could see a fun business model.
It could totally be that. You're absolutely right, Leslie. And for anybody out there that listens to this, it's a great idea to take on, do a little Airbnb or whatever you want to call it, and allow people to stay overnight someplace, just like a hotel, but they have a little kitchenette, keep it stocked, whatever, and let people just respite for a little bit and feel like $1 million recovering, so that they're 100% ready when they are ready to go home. And that's so much more affordable than charging an insurance company and making costs go up and things like that for unnecessary care. And then you don't get sleep in the hospital. We all know that. The nurses do their jobs incredibly well, and they will come in and get your vital signs and poke on your fundus, your tummy, and all that stuff. And oh my goodness, take your baby away. And so that adds to the stressors. So where are we going with the hospitals? If we go back to that original question, you know, I'm really encouraging consumers to get involved and to understand. We have on our wall, choose your birth experience. And that choosing your birth is part of, I choose to be educated. I choose to show up. I choose to learn and partake and have shared decision making. And doing that isn't someone telling them you will blah, 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 blah. It's understanding that relationship. And until we get our moms talking to their daughters and grandmas talking to their grandchildren and talking about birth and then telling their stories and then encouraging them to be prepared, their birth choices are going to be somebody else's choice. So if consumers want it, it'll change the hospitals. I see it changing in our area. It's a slow progress. It's an uphill battle, but it is changing.
I think it's changing. It's very slow. And we've brought up all these different aspects of it. Everything from being able to have full admitting practices and reimbursement and practice as independent providers for real. There are so many different things that come into it, but I do think it's moving in that direction. And I remember back in the late 60s when there was such a big push for couples to be together, and they came in handcuffed together so that the dads could go to the delivery room with them and they didn't have to leave their moms, leave their wives. And they were, childbirth education was such a big deal. And it made all the difference in what hospitals did. Hospitals just didn't know what to do with all this stuff. But it went away. And that's really unfortunate. And we need to have that kind of push back from the community and from our clients.
Well, and I also think, go ahead.
I'll let you finish, Hillary, and then I'll brainstorm an angle to this. So go ahead.
No, I also think we need to look within our profession and look at how we train midwives and what the expectation of educational programs is. And in both the CNM and CPM community over these years, I've seen a push for what are my numbers? How can I get my numbers? Well, midwifery is not about numbers. Midwifery is about experience. And when Kathy was talking about really knowing what is labor and birth, is really getting back to this isn't that, my gosh, I caught this many babies. It's about, I really saw the entire process of labor and birth. You know, I'm a big believer in continuity of care that and it's something that NARM has woven into their certification that the AMCB has not. But you have to, in order to be NARM certified, you have to do at least 5 continuity of care births. And that means that you've done, I believe it's 5 prenatals over two trimesters, minimum of 2 trimesters, the birth, the postpartum, the newborn exam, and at least one postpartum exam. And I would love to see that into CNM practice as well, because I do believe that through that continuity of care, through seeing people through their prenatal care into the birth and into the postpartum, that you learn so much as a midwife.
Absolutely. You know, I think that's coming because we have students, for example, from Frontier for their entire practicum. And so they get the 10-week pregnant woman all the way to their postpartum. Great. So yeah, it just depends on the choice of schools they go to. And yeah, if you get to have them for that length of time, because a lot of them jump all around. And I think we get them probably because we do everything. And right, what I mean is they can follow them to the hospital even. And so that's a benefit. So they quote unquote get that benefit of being in the hospital. But in all due respect, the nurse knows how to work in a hospital most of the time. They don't need to have midwifery experience in the hospital too. I'm one of those that doesn't believe in that. So
I guess part of it is I also see the benefit, and this is from the educator point of view, of having students be in more than one practicum site, because I do think that they get the benefit of seeing that there's more than one way to run a practice as well. But maybe having longer practicums and having a variety of sites. So
I think one thing we had talked about on the sidelines, Kathy and I, like just the business side of midwifery and the advocacy side, because we schools are teaching so much the clinical component side, and with me running my business, midwifery business consultation, like to have more people, the myths and the barriers and the hurdles of just running their own business. Nobody is trained unless you have a mentor and you have that's just not right, something in our society as a whole. And so that's why I went down this pathway, because we can inspire and we can say, yes, we want autonomy, the laws and regulations. But if there's no business education, there's no professional development on that aspect, that's a big hurdle to get over. It's a learning curve. There's a reason 90% of business is the first 5 years. So yeah, I think there's a lot of opportunities. The one thing I wanted to pivot, I think with the future of midwifery, and you guys can add to it, this pandemic, to me, I see a big pivoting point. I see an extreme of a lot of fear and anxiety with health direction. And then the other direction is so many women are like, okay, it is truly a sick house. I want my partner. I want my visitors. I want a normal birth experience. And so I would love for each one of you to talk about what you see as far as short-term and long-term effects of the COVID and the pandemic around the world in the United States.
I think for me, I'm waiting on the numbers. No offense, the numbers are important on that one. So, I mean, I, the numbers of how many people actually changed their birth plan and left what they believed to be the best place to have a baby in the hospital to an outside entity, either to a home birth or to a birth center. So I am really interested in seeing 2020 numbers.
So I'm going to
I think we probably will see a pendulum swift change. You know what I mean?
However, I'm going to put a little however on it, is what I'm hearing from providers is that they saw a lot of folks change, especially at the height of the pandemic when they were being separated from, being told they would be separated from their partner and or couldn't have a doula with them, who would switch to an out-of-hospital setting, but that the transfer rate for that group of people was higher. And often, and this goes sort of hand in hand with societal changes to me, is if somebody had previously chosen a hospital birth, often there's fear associated with being out of the hospital, and that that manifests during their labor. And we're not talking about necessarily transports because of complications, but transports because of stalled labors and people not being comfortable being in the out of hospital setting. So I'd like to see those statistics as well.
Yeah, a lot of people, it's back to choose your birth experience. If you're not prepared to be out of the hospital,
yeah,
you're most likely going to fail. You right. have to prepare yourself. You have to know that moment where you want to have an epidural, your baby's coming. You know what I mean?
Well, and it's not only that, it's talking to people about, I think when we talk, we have to talk realistically about risk and about statistics, and that when you choose to be in a hospital, you there is no guarantee, even though, and I'm thinking of media, doesn't portray it that way, but there's no guarantee in a hospital of outcome, but there's also no guarantee at home. It's just that your risk set is different in an out of hospital than an in hospital setting. So that the moment I walk in the door of a hospital, I've actually increased my risk of intervention, and I've actually increased my risk of infection because of being in a different environment. But when I choose to birth at home, I don't have a neonatal unit down the hall or a blood bank down the hall. So then I'm choosing a different risk set. And I think that the way that we explain that to people, there is no zero risk place to give birth.
Yeah, Carolyn, I would love to hear your input on just the what you've seen, at least maybe with your family. I know you've been retired now, but with what you've seen with family members and the mindset around birth and the pandemic.
I'm sorry, you were asking
you.
I was just asking with your family, because I know I can't ask you in clinical practice. I can't ask you like seeing directly in the hospital setting what you're seeing with the culture of birth.
I'm not seeing directly, but I know that in our area, there has definitely been a surge of women to out of hospital birth during the pandemic and a move to midwives. During this period of time. Now, I'm not sure how it's all kind of fallen out over individual births and that kind of thing, but it's brought a different mindset to people. I think the idea of out of hospital birth has been such a fringe kind of thing for a long time that now it's starting to be seen much more as an option, not just something that a few people will select. And of course, I'm entirely from a hospital birth point of view, although I've always been a very focused physiologic birther, if you will. I knit in the room and really insisted that I and anyone attending patient's birth do some birth sitting with them and some labor sitting and understand what that's about. I think that one of the reasons labor's gotten so medicalized and such is that a physician has, a rare physician has seen labor from start to finish. And I kind of don't blame them for thinking epidurals are wonderful, because they walk in, the patient is all uncomfortable and miserable, and they say, oh, okay, you can have your epidural now. And next time they come in, the patient's going, oh, thank you so much, this is wonderful. And they think that's a great thing to do. They don't get that if you work with that woman for a while, get her out of the bed, for heaven's sakes, get her out of the bed, and move her around, put her in a tub, put her in the shower, keep her nourished, crazy things like that will make all the difference, speed up the birth, and she won't need anesthesia. And yes, they holler, but the joy that is seen immediately after birth is so priceless. And we don't see that as much in women with epidurals. It's very, very different. So
we need and to- they can have nursing problems as well. Oh. Implicated in, and you know, it goes as I'm listening to you and I'm thinking about what you said, Carolyn, and what Kathy said, is so much of this is also how birth is presented to the public,
right?
As something to, as a wonderful rite of passage into parenthood, or as something to fear. Mm-hmm. So two Christmases ago, I went on vacation to Italy, and we did a one-day bus tour around Tuscany, and one of the other couples was on their honeymoon, and they were from Brazil, and they were middle class, both lawyers, and I remember walking around actually a medieval castle, talking with this young woman who said she knew of nobody who had given birth vaginally.
Right, right.
And she was terrified of birth. And we could, it's like we're at this crossroads, we could go in that direction where the only babies who are born vaginally are the ones who are precipitous. Or we could go in the direction that we started this conversation of, where people, we see a huge growth in physiologic birth, regardless of setting, in utilization of midwives, of utilization of birth centers, of shifting to the percentages that we see in Europe of the number of midwives per obstetrician, where we have more midwives than we have, by a factor of 10 than we do obstetricians, because it's the midwives who are taking care of women in labor. I mean, you know, and I can see both pathways. I hope that the second is the one that comes to pass.
Yes.
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with not just the culture with the consumers, but this pivotal moment of our education and burnout with midwives. Like, I think the pandemic has pushed, the waiting list was already present without a hospital practices, and Kathy could probably vouch with her birth center practice, but it pushes the limits of what the midwives are willing to take and do, or the clinical sites. I mean, like, as you guys are talking, I think of the times I push the envelope of physiological birth in the hospital setting, and I got lectures of how you're incompetent, or like you sit between, like when you're trying to, where's the advocacy side to help the midwives, not just for advocacy for the consumers as well. So yeah, whoever wants to add on to that.
I just think it varies so much from place to place. Mm-hmm. And so what I see in New Mexico is very different than what you see in DC or New York City as well. And we shouldn't, you know, the statistics or women's bodies aren't different in those places, but the how they're treated are.
Oh yeah.
And absolutely. Where are you, Kathy?
Kansas City. Right in the middle.
Right in the middle.
We got a little bit of everything. So, Kathy, you were going to add something when we were talking.
We were talking a little bit about the physicians in birth and the midwives in birth and hanging out and knitting and all that. You know, midwives don't get paid to do that, neither do physicians. So I go back to when you mentioned, Leslie, supporting and advocating for the midwives. The role of the doula is actually to support the woman in labor, but midwives do that too. Technically, and oftentimes you don't need to have a doula if the mom's well-prepared, has a good team, and you have a good midwife. However, the billing is not set up, reimbursement is not set up for midwives to be paid for that. That's why the physicians will come in when they see the head coming, when they get called, because they have nurses that are paid to be there. And the physician is actually paid for the delivery, not for the labor. And we are on the same billing pathway. We're not paid to labor that patient. We're paid to deliver them, and we're paid to follow up with them. We're not paid to sit there for 12 hours. And that's the biggest discrepancy, because we are there. So if we're gonna focus on getting doulas reimbursed, which I'm really behind, I'm all about that. I would like to say, I'm the doula too. Can I get reimbursed for that time?
Double coding, yeah.
Well, you know what I'm saying?
Because it's yes, totally.
We spend a lot of time and energy, and that's what causes the burnout, is we are so passionate about our work, we don't get a break.
Right.
Because we're there when they're in active labor until they're delivered and safely postpartum. We are there.
Nobody, which is what we were talking about before, is this whole getting paid for procedures and not for time. And I also think of it as the fragmentation of care, because I also know, having started, as I'm sure you guys did, before there were doulas and before there was a lactation consultant in every community, is that that was all part of midwifery care. And the same with before we were sending people to dietitians and nutritionists. And there's been this total fragmentation of all these things that I see as part of midwifery care, but yet everybody gets paid for all these little pieces of it versus saying midwives are worth paying for all of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And how many times did I labor sit and ended up with a C-section, and the full fee goes to the doctor.
Yes. Isn't that irritating?
Oh, it's just awful. Yeah. And if you have a global fee, it gets the whole thing. I did all the prenatal care and et cetera. Okay. And
actually, we took that on in my community and said, if you did not do all the prenatal care, and if you did not do all the labor sitting, I'm going to bill for the prenatal care, and I'm going to bill with those 99 codes. You know what I'm talking about?
99356. Break it up because it's two.
And I'm going to bill for those separately, and you can bill for the birth itself, what you did. And that's really, we took it up with our hospital, because I was darned if I was not going to get paid for the work that I already did.
Well, let me tell you about so we started off with the coming changes. And let me tell you what a coming change is. We have a contract with a group of OBs. If they do a cesarean delivery, for example, I'll just stay with that one, an instrumental delivery, forceps, something like that, for us, that they will bill us $350. We bill for the C-section.
And the reason,
the reason is they're contracted employees of the hospital to step in if we desire. And so they're paid already. So they're going to pay for that service only based on the CMS fee schedule and nothing else. And then we are allowed to bill for the global, because you know the global gets you a higher reimbursement. When Absolutely. You pick it apart, you lose money. So that's a coming thing. And I encourage all birth centers or outside community-based midwives to work on a relationship such as that, because it saves you money in the long run. Because it's just like you said, Carolyn, we've done all the work. And Hillary, if we break it up, we're going to lose $500 easily.
Easily.
So the patients always kind of are like, how can you bill for a C-section? It's because we have an agreement to do that. So it keeps the patient with us. We don't lose them. And we actually pay them. They bill us for that birth. It's a lovely relationship. That's a new thing. It's totally legal.
It is. I'd love to have information on that to pass along to my students. Do you know of other birth centers who are doing that as well?
Let me just say it like this way. I was part of a group that encouraged the group called OBHG. So you can look it up.
Okay.
If there's an OBHG in your area, go after a contract like that, because they're hospitalists. They're OB hospitalists.
Right. Yes.
That stay in the hospital. And if you transfer directly to them and they deliver the baby or whatever, you can have an agreement where you still bill for the global, but they bill you for the birth. It saves money, and they recognize that. So it's a win for them, because that's encouraging you to use them as your for your transfers, number one. Number two, it keeps the patient with you, who knows you the best, and they all know that.
Right.
We're they get the idea that they are the outsider, they're the stranger, and they're not going to do anything spectacular because the patient loves you already. They already get that. So let's make it a win-win. This is not, they do this with family practice physicians, because most of them, unless they are in a critical access area, cannot do cesarean deliveries. If they've been trained and they're working in a rural health community, a critical, they can do C-sections. So the same kind of agreement goes with family practice. So this is a change that hospitals are doing futuristically to engage the midwifery community, keep with the patients with
the hospitalists,
serve them when they need it. So. And there's our inside too.
That really fits with the whole hospitalist movement.
Yes.
Which is relatively new, that we have hospitalists pretty universally now.
I wish someone did. It would make it so much easier for the community-based midwives to smoothly make transfers. And it's just about developing the relationship and making that smooth transition of care when and as needed.
And then it's really interesting. Oh, sorry. Excuse me?
I was just asking, Kathy, do you do their postpartum care?
Yes.
Great.
Unless they've had surgery. So they while they're in the hospital, if they had a surgical birth,
right,
the OB will still step in. I still rounded on them because I love them. I don't get paid for that, but I still rounded on them. But technically, let's just say Hillary sent a patient in, they got sectioned. They would... Once they discharge them, they go right back to Hillary. The only time it wouldn't is if they had some major issue, like let's say they started having pulmonary emboli. Hillary doesn't want her patient back, I'm assuming.
No, I probably don't.
That's what I say. That's the best time to refer to that other group.
Yes.
And they know that, because they know that that's out of my scope. And I don't want that to be in my scope. And I want that patient to live a long life and be cared for properly and be on Lovenox and all of that other stuff. So that's the only time you would not get your patient back. And the agreement says that. And it also includes that triage of a client that might be all of a sudden showing signs of severe preeclampsia, and they get over there and everything's fine. You know how you say my blood pressure is 180 over 120 and you're like, go straight to the hospital. And they find it to be 120 over 80, you know, then it's like, okay, go back to your midwife. That's how the relationship is. It's lovely.
That's nice. I was going to say, I happen to live in a city where family practice docs still do cesareans even and do births. It's so different all over the country. We actually have training programs for family practice docs in OB in Albuquerque. And one of the professors here also has been teaching vaginal breech. Mm. So
I think it's really cool. All that I think about when Kathy talks is, this is why we need midwifery business education. I mean, these things are legal. We can think creatively of how do we create a win-win? I mean, like, we don't think, it's an independent contract relationship. Like, yeah, it's totally legit. But if you don't understand those strategies, you don't understand the levels of how you can create a business structure, you can't even creatively think it's possible. So yes, all I'm thinking when I'm talking, when Kathy was talking, is like, business education is so important.
It's great. So yes, maybe that's the, even though I'm a little wary of hospitalists as a future of our hospitals, but
if you know you have a concrete, reliable system that you can refer to versus you have a primary person that's retiring, is on vacation, you're very, that transfers are very vulnerable. It gives you a concrete relationship with a group. And so I do see, it's just how you structure it, Hillary. I really think that there is a lot of benefits to, they're going to get somebody they don't know anyways. Is it the doc of the night or the hospitalist coverage? So
a lot of times the hospitalists are successful in areas that there are a lot of safety net clinics. In other words, there's a lot of providers that will do prenatal care. And so they have to go somewhere. And so they'll show up in labor somewhere and there's hospitalists. So that's the benefit of them. And that's how they target what areas to be successful in and to make, you know, they get paid $1,500 a day to be there. So they figure out which population is going to rend them enough money to stay alive and, you know, cover their malpractice and their salaries and their staff and all of that. So it's a good model if it's around. That's where back to get the other birth centers or community-based midwives to using OBHG.
Yep. Got it. Picked up my pen and wrote it down.
Yeah.
Well, we've been going for a long time.
We have. It's been an hour. I know Kathy joined us, but I think this is a good time to, I really appreciate all of you joining today. I loved where the direction of the conversations went, and hopefully we can do it again, maybe the tail end of the summer, and hopefully everybody will have a nice tan at that point. But I appreciate all of you and your wonderful wisdom. And if there's anything, I will definitely put at the bottom everybody's email if people had questions, if Kathy's wonderful strategies people want to know about, or Hillary's wonderful Florida educational program project. I mean, there's so many great resources you all have. So I'll definitely put your contact information at the bottom. And thank you again, everyone.
Thank you. It was good to see you guys. Bye.
Absolutely.